Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two buddies playfully mock each other to mask how much affection they have for each other. So we might as well call it the disguise disguise. Soren, I found a way to make the intro fun for me again. I am one of your hosts, author, Last Week Tonight writer, and 1999's winner for Best Actor in a Foreign Language Short Sketch, Daniel O'Brien. I am joined, as always, by Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hello.
One of the things that I've learned about the intro to this show that is sort of new over the last, I want to say, 4 or 5 episodes, is I front load so much stuff in the intro that just gets burned because like you're not going to tug at any of those threads. You refuse to take any of the bait that I'm.
I always pick up some breadcrumb from you from the intro, but that okay. You know, I can't. I obviously I'm not going to go back through and make you go through each thing in detail.
I think last week, depending on when these episodes come out, no idea, I mentioned voluntarily submitting the information to a first grade teacher that I didn't have any friends, and there was just such a like very felt and lived in silence afterwards where I was just like, okay, so he's not, no questions from him there, okay, well let's get to his fucking thing then.
I was just marveling at how you always find a way to be so on brand.
Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Take the next step in your creative journey with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people on topics including illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more. You get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. We're going to get into this show, but before that, we wanted to thank our listeners who prefer to be called the Bacon Truthers. That one's not a... I really like this... I don't know if this exists, but I like the idea that a portion of our audience thinks there's something strange going on with Bacon, and that's why he hasn't been on the show for
something is
now.
Afoot. It doesn't smell right that Bacon hasn't been here, and we keep coming up with different reasons why he's not here.
Yeah. It's weird because he is here and does have a microphone and could explain himself anytime he wanted. Bacon?
Jeez, Louise, yeah. Bacon.
Damn. I'm with the truthers, personally. Not about being a fan of the show. But just about thinking that something's wild. We will ask each other some quick questions and hopefully get some long answers. But before that, as we've been doing for the COVID-19 quarantine edition, we're just going to do a quick 2-minute check-in with each other on the quarantine. Soren, how's yours going?
It's so nice to have it be over with. I'm so pleased that it's done. I'm back out there. I'm in circulation. I am living life.
You're shaking hands, you're glad handing, you're meeting the people, pressing the flesh.
My P's and my S's are spitting in people's faces. it feels so good. I'm out there, I'm at the old Pizza Hut salad bars, just like talking and piling wet lettuce and pudding on my plate.
Oh yeah, now I heard for a while for the quarantine, they had to take the plexiglass away from those Pizza Huts and redistribute them at like supermarkets. So now it's still completely open for you. That's gotta feel
so
great.
So much more freedom. Like, I mean, I'm a big hands talker. Yeah. So like I'm not hitting anything as I'm going. It's wonderful.
I don't think a lot of people know the real genuine pleasure you get from just plunging a whole hand into one of those cylindrical tubes of garbanzo beans at a Pizza Hut salad bar. There's nothing else like it.
It's sometimes, you know, you have a job where it changes the way that you watch movies, where like you start to watch a movie and you start to see how the sausage is made, or like it affects some way in which you appreciate the film. I've gotten to the point now where I've been in quarantine long enough. I've been doing this dance long enough where I have to prepare before I go outside. And when I come back home, that when I see people so careless in movies and shows, I'm immediately affected by it. Where a bunch of people are just like packed into an area. I was like, oh, okay. All right, everybody. let's be cool.
My quarantine fear revelation, on top of all the normal ones, speaking of getting outside, like you were joking about doing, I've been running is like the only thing that I can do because like we're allowed to be outside to do it, and it's exercise, and I can't possibly run inside my apartment, so I just try to do it as much as possible. And it's getting nicer in New York now. And so the sheer amount of people who are clearly left with no other options riding those rented city bikes around for the first time in a very long time, it's really on the rise, and it's really fucking scary. I know it's not the scariest part of the coronavirus by any means, but like you can see in the eyes of these people that they're like, I think I might have bit off a little bit more than I could chew.
It's obviously not the worst, but definitely a new terror you didn't anticipate. Are you running in a mask?
I am running in a bandana. Okay. Like I tried running in the mask that I use for like my normal walking around, Jackson business, and I thought I was going to die. So I only did the one run with that. And then I've been doing the bandana, which is, largely for show at this point. I don't know how effective it is at saving me or anyone around me, but you got to understand, Soren, I'm so fucking fast out there, man.
You've got that.
No one's catching up to me. That virus is not catching me.
You got that slipstream behind you. Whatever you're infected with, it's just like this wake behind you. I'm the same way. I'm in that I'm very fast. No, I'm the same way in that I went for a run. I went for a run, tried to do it in the mask, and immediately was like, this is untenable, and took it off and just stayed about 12 feet from everybody. Because there wasn't where I live, there's not a lot of people. There's a campus called West Los Angeles campus, and I tried to go on there to go run around. And a security guard who had his mask down below his nose, just like hanging out on his chin, was like, where's your mask? And I was like, oh, I can't wear it when I'm running. And he was like, you can't come on campus unless you have a mask. And I was like, fuck it, motherfucker, look at you. But then, so since then, I haven't gone running, but I've been riding my bike with the kid trailer on the back of it, which that trailer is heavy. I'd say it weighs like 40 pounds. And then you put my son in it and it's another 40. I do these hills around here and it just kicks my ass. And I've been trying to do it with the mask on and I can feel like the mask getting sucked into my mouth. I'm breathing so hard. And I don't know. It's just, exercise is impossible right now.
It's tough. And I really like, I know that everyone selfishly feels like, how about everyone follows the rules except me? Then things will be good for everybody. But that's truly how I feel about running because like, I'd been doing it for a while on this same trail and it's a nice trail and I love doing it. And now there are a lot of people who are on this trail for the first time because nothing else in New York is open. And so they're either taking up a lot of space or they're again, shakily riding these bikes for the first time in years. And so I'm like, look, I get it. We all want to go outside, but not all of us can't. So I'm going to, and you won't.
Yeah, I was like looking for places to bike with him. I was getting pretty sick of these hills and I was like, I know that I can ride down by the river. If I spot by the library, I can get in. And that means when I'm talking about the Los Angeles River, which if people don't know, it's from Greece. It's got that like just like a big concrete river.
Yeah, you could run right in.
And so I was like, oh, I know there's a bike trail right along there. And it was such a stupid mistake because, you know, there's 1500 people within the mile that you're trying to do also on that same trail because nothing is open. People are just scrambling to the last things that have stayed open.
Yeah, it's bad. But let's get into our fun show. Soren, I have a quick question.
Okay, shoot.
You got any news for me?
Yeah.
You got anything new that happened?
Yeah. Okay, so I mentioned a while ago that my wife was pregnant. She no longer is. Because we had a baby.
Jesus Christ, Soren. God almighty. Oh my God. Soren, sincerely, no. Unacceptable.
We have a baby girl. It was scary. We thought we were going to have her at home because my wife woke up in the middle of the night, I would say like 3 or 4, and she felt some contractions. But she has been having these things called Braxton Hicks all throughout her third trimester, which are just these occasionally you get weird contractions and you're like, okay, well, that's nothing new. And then they started to have some pattern to them and she thought, okay, maybe this is it. Now this was on April 30th and she's not due until May 10th. She was like, oh, that's early. But she sat through it for about an hour before she woke me up and was like, I think we need to go to the hospital. I think at some point we need to go to the hospital. We should call my parents because the plan was to have her mom and dad come out to watch Ronan. They had been social isolating specifically for this purpose, and they were going to drive. And it's going to take them 8 hours to get here. So we're like, okay, we'll call them. And we have a
a nanny who's also been helping us like once a month, who are like, she can be our, she's like our emergency person to call when this happens. And we call her and we're like, oh, we may need you to come over. She's like, okay, I'll start getting ready. And almost immediately Colleen started to transition into active labor in our house. Wow. And so we called Maria back. We're like, you have to get over here right now. And Colleen was like on the floor of the bathroom, trying not to bear down. And she was like, I think we're going to have this baby here. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And so I'm thinking of like where to set up, in the tub or on the floor, and starting to get some stuff ready. And we called 911. And in the middle of my call with 911, she comes out of the middle of a contraction. She's like, okay, I think I can get in the car right now. And I said, never mind. And hung up on 911. We run outside. Maria, as Maria is driving, our old nanny is driving up. We just like pass each other like two ships in the night. Ronan is like crying in the house because he's heard his mom screaming and he doesn't quite understand what's going on. And Colleen has another contraction right there outside by the car as like people are walking their dogs outside in the early morning, like hearing this woman just scream and this man holding her up. And we put a towel down in the back of the car. She climbed in. I like threw the car seat out of the car because she needed to be in the back. She got in on all fours and we drove to the hospital as fast as we could. We got to the hospital. They were very nonchalant about the whole thing. They're like, is she here for an appointment? And I was like, no, no. And we finally get her up to the room. They get her on the bed and there's just a head there. Like she is crowning immediately.
Wow.
Like she was trying not to push in the car, but like this baby was just there. And we could have had it at home. We could have had it in the car. She was just very cool and calm about not having this baby until it was time. And then within half an hour of being at the hospital, we suddenly had a baby.
Unreal.
Yeah. It was wild. And the first time that we had a child, it was the exact opposite. She was in active labor for like 10 hours, which is unheard of. That's like a Guinness record.
I remember that. It was the exact opposite. You spend all that time in the hospital and then you're like, fuck it, we're having this baby at home. And you left and you delivered it at home.
Yeah. It was wild. That was kind of what we were anticipating again, was like, okay, well this will take a while. And it did not at all. This baby was just ready to come. And it was almost 2 weeks early and scary at first and then really, really, really great. And has been great ever since. And she's gaining weight. She's doing awesome. She's a good baby.
That's fantastic. And she's gorgeous. You sent pictures.
My wife is also healthy. I should note that because people will wonder. My wife is she's doing great. My wife is wonderful. Couldn't be better right now.
Yeah, it's obviously I somewhat unfairly don't have any babies, but it is the older you get, the more things you learn and train yourself to say whenever someone you know has a baby.
Right.
You know, I've gone from the first time a friend or family member had a baby that I could just be like, oh yeah, they had the baby. Bye. That's the information I have. And now it's like, I had the baby, 7 pounds, 5 ounces, 18 inches long, 10 fingers, 10 toes. Mommy and baby are healthy. I think that's it. I think I've given you the list of information that I have since learned are all of the follow-up questions from anyone who has ever met someone who's had a baby.
Right. It's a weird song and dance we all have to do around birth. And even when a baby's in utero, where you don't specifically ask how the baby's doing, you ask how mom is doing, because that's an indication then. They don't have to tell you if they don't want to. And like, it's weird. If I was like, write a book about it, I know that it's all built around sexism. It's built around like not letting women have to express something that's going to be displeasing to the people around her. The reason like you don't tell people that you're pregnant until 3 months in is because it's not as viable. Then like there's a lot of people who lose a child in that first trimester very early on. And it's so, so common. And basically it's not, what we should do is be, you tell everybody and then you have a support network around you. If for some reason you don't get to have that child, you have people around you who are like, you can emotionally count on. Whereas when it's a secret, then when you don't get to have the baby, you're devastated and no one else around you knows what the fuck is going on with you. You're just a different person all of a sudden.
Yeah, and we probably aren't the best people to talk about this, but when has that ever stopped us before? It is, even if you do know someone who is pregnant and then they tragically, of course, something goes wrong and they lose the baby. Even the messaging around that it's obviously sad, but it's also very strange where it happens through like back channels where the messaging is like starts from the parents, obviously. And then it's just like, if you could just spread this information out to other people.
Right.
And then we'll all just not talk about it forever.
Yes.
And like, I understand that. I imagine sad things that could happen to me and thinking like, you know, what I don't want is a group of people looking at me and talking to me about this, but it seems like an unhealthy societal thing that we've built up about the communication surrounding these things.
I remember, I don't know. Okay. So we did a sketch a long time ago called
Segway
Internet High School. Do you remember that one? Or like if the internet was a high school?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So in that I play Facebook. It's one long take. I'm kind of in the middle of it and I had to say a bunch of gibberish in the middle of it. That day was the day that we had found out that we thought that this is when I was having my first son. My wife was having our first son. And we found out erroneously that something was wrong. And like that we had to talk to a genetic counselor and stuff about whether we wanted to terminate the pregnancy and things like that. It was a very scary time and one that was also very secretive. And I was in no headspace to be doing a sketch. So if you go back and watch, like, I am just not there. Like, my eyes are not in it. I'm not there. And I ended up ruining probably like 46 takes because of it.
Yeah, this is really going to sound like a classic Deanie O'Beanie goof em up, but you were legitimately terrible that day.
Yeah.
I had no, and I'm just learning right now that there was a reason behind it. I thought, I don't know. You know, clearly he's not present. I didn't think it was anything potentially devastating. I thought it was just like you screwed up a few times and it's one take. So when you screw up in the middle of a one take shot, then you've made everyone's day a little bit worse. And I thought you were just getting in your head about that over and over again. Because
there was that too.
Man.
That was compounding on top of it as well. But it was like I was just not in a place to be doing a sketch. So you could go back and watch it and you can look at it and it's clear like, oh, something is different. His eyes are dead.
Man. You just shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. The show goes on, Dan.
Well, I'm happy everyone's healthy. I can't wait to meet your little daughter whenever all this is over and give you guys presents and so forth and so on. And get on a plane again. That seems fun too. Man. It's going to be a really great trip.
You could watch a movie on that plane.
Oh, hell yeah.
I wonder if they'll have Any Given Sunday.
Do you have any? Yeah, go ahead.
I want to know about your relationship with your dog right now.
Oh, that's not the most fun thing in the world right now. Just because, like, on like a real level that he's been, for a few weeks now, he's had loose stool and sometimes blood in his stool. And I took him to the vet a bit ago and had his poop tested for all the things you get it tested for, and it all came back negative. And I got these pills that I've gotten before, which is just sort of like a stool firming up thing that you give your dog, and also the standard pet advice that is either a bullshit dog coup or legitimate advice where they just say give him rice and chicken.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Boiled rice and chicken for a while, and then like slowly shift the ratio of rice and chicken to his normal food from like 80-20 rice, chicken, normal food, 70-30 until you eventually transition him back into his normal food. And I've been doing that, and like clockwork, every time we get back into normal food, the problem is just back. And I'm at the point now where I feel like it's happened enough times that I've gone back to the chicken and rice and done the whole transition again, maybe three whole cycles of this now, where he does start to get a little bit better and then relapses. So I think now is time to go to the vet again, which itself can be very frustrating for any dog parent because they are expensive. They often don't know because we don't really have like the communication that you could have with when you're talking to a person, and like they can send the poop off somewhere and like, oh, it came back negative. So monitor him and make sure. And if he gets worse, then we'll talk about it. We'll do something else. You know, there's so much that they don't know. And it's extra scary with him because he's got like a heart murmur that doesn't stop him from doing anything or being playful or seeing the world through the eyes of a poet, as he does, as he says. But it just means, like, if we needed to do a more thorough exam that required putting him to sleep, then it's a scary thing because you don't want to put a 14-pound dog with a heart murmur to sleep. Oh. So, you know, been dealing with that. And, like, he still has all his energy, and he's still like the happy. His personality is the same. He doesn't seem exhausted or anything like that. So it's not the most worrying thing in the world. And I laugh about the strange things that have been added to my life in quarantine, because now I'm giving him medicine that he hates and I have to open his mouth and throw it down his throat, because I know what you're going to say, listeners. Peanut butter doesn't work. Mixing it up with the chicken and rice doesn't work. He will find it and spit it out. He's very good at it. There's no one better in the world than separating food in his own mouth and spitting out the thing that he knows he doesn't like. So I have to throw it down his throat and then hold his mouth closed and stare at him and make eye contact until he swallows it for real. Yeah. And he'll fake swallow it a few times.
Your dog famously eats maraschino cherries and spits out the stem tied in a knot.
Absolutely. And it's really cool. So I just have to, like, hold his mouth shut for a while and stare at him. And I know he doesn't understand. And the other thing that has been added to most of my days now is, like, he'll have this very disgusting wet stool when we're off on our walk. And then before I get inside, I have to, like, fully clean his butt. Because it's like, you know how explosive diarrhea can be on anyone. He's no exception. And that's like, I don't normally have to clean his butt all the time. But now it's like, well, this is part of my routine now. I got to shove this pill down his throat and hold his mouth shut for a minute. And I got to wipe his ass before going in the house. Otherwise, he's going to wipe shit all over my couch or my carpet.
No,
this is my day now. I'm wearing a mask. I'm doing this.
I'll spend some time with your dog. I've dug that for you. It's a smart dog. He's no dummy. And I wonder if in his mind right now what's happening is you started giving him something new that you forced down his throat that he does not think is food. He's got some terrible diarrhea from it. And it's only because you've decided you like wiping his ass a lot. Like, in his mind, it's like, well, this is a really roundabout way of getting to this point.
Yeah. I really do think if he had the gift of language, that at some point he'd be like, listen, man, this quarantine thing was pretty cool in the beginning, but now you've added a whole lot of other stuff to my day that I don't really understand how it fits in. We were fine before.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Dan. I hope that resolves itself.
That's okay. Our relationship is still good.
That's good. This episode of Quick Question is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of inspiring classes for creativity. There's one that I found recently, Daniel. That's called Everyday Minimalism, Find Calm and Creativity in Living Simply. And it just reading that gave me such this sigh of relief of like, oh my God, life could be better. I have such a cluster of stuff now, just in you accrue at being in your mid-30s and then also having children. You accrue so much stuff and there's just nowhere to put it. And so I started taking these classes to try and learn about minimalism and how I can just shed.
Yeah.
And I have not taken any of it into heart yet, but the class itself is so soothing that it feels like it's doing the job for me.
That sounds right up my alley, because we have a planned hiatus week coming up for work, which is a thing that used to mean something. And now it just looks like a big mountain of time that I need to fill in between sleeping. So learning minimalism and essentialism sounds like it's perfect project for that week for me. Focusing on what's important and getting rid of the clutter.
Of course.
Sign me up.
Everybody could use it. They have a lot of classes on productivity and lifestyle and entrepreneurship, creative writing, film and video, kind of everything, whatever you're interested in, they've got a class for it. Skillshare offers creative classes designed for real life and all the circumstances that come with it. It's always the right time to stay inspired, express yourself, and connect with a community of millions. Now, one of their bullet points is that they settle your mind. And like, that's like the itch that needs scratching for me, is like, just watching this makes me feel better. It just calms me. If you're anxious, explore classes that may help you express what you're feeling through creative self-discovery.
If you're uncertain about what's next, a creative challenge or productivity classes may offer a helpful structure for setting small goals and feeling a fulfilling sense of accomplishment. Spontaneous acts of creativity may help break up the routine of a day spent indoors, explore workshops, classes, and more, all with Skillshare.
Explore your creativity and get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 free whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to Skillshare.com/QQ.
I do have another quick question for you. Can I go over again?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
This is a question that I was nostalgic for because it belonged to a time before the now where we don't interact with other humans. But when you would go to like a bar or a club or a baseball game or something, and you're standing at a public urinal, you haven't started peeing yet, and there are people all around you, maybe on other sides of you, maybe even an airport, and there are other people behind you maybe waiting for a urinal. What are you saying in your head to get yourself psyched up enough to pee?
Assuming I'm in that situation, which is rare, because I'm notoriously a very shy peer, and if I feel like I'm going to get myself in a situation where there are people next to me, I'll just be like, "Wow, that's not in the cards for us today.
we'll hold it.
We'll just let this turn into whatever kills us in the end. Just some poison inside." But if I really have to psych myself up, I will say in my head my own name, like a probably clinically worrisome amount of times. I like my name a lot, and I'm a fan of myself. So there's a lot of like, "Come on, Daniel, you fucking Daniel, you got this, Daniel."
You really do psych yourself up. I love it.
I do, yeah.
And so what about, like, is this the same sort of circumstance? Like, if you, let's say you have somebody over at your house, you've just had intimate relations with somebody and you're going to go pee in the bathroom. There's no reason to shut the door. You've both seen everything. And now they can hear anything that's happening in the bathroom. So you have a small window of time in which you should be peeing, or otherwise it's weird. Do you do it there as well? When there's an expectation that you need to be peeing, do you do it in all those circumstances?
I shut the door, Zora.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought the mystery was over.
No.
Okay.
I mean, we're not married.
Yeah.
We. There must be some secrets left.
Well, I'm not saying you poop in front of her. Or that when she's pooping, you go into the bathroom and say, "I need to pee," and she makes a little bit of room for you to pee while she's pooping.
No, nothing like that. None of that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not mad. I sound madder than I am.
I like it's like a workout.
Come on, oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
got this. You got this. Mm-hmm. Finish strong.
Sometimes I'll say everyone's counting on you.
Oh, yes. Okay. This is good. That's very comforting to me because I do it as well. I don't like having to pee when people are waiting or I feel like they're watching me. I could do it fine if there's somebody next to me and they've got their own business going on. But when there's an expectation that I need to pee in a certain amount of time, there's no way I'm getting it done unless I like really talk myself into it. And I have to know what's coming after this. Like what part of my day is exciting enough that like my bladder would be like, "Oh, that's fun." And like, is like, "Okay," and release. And a lot of times I just make it up because my days aren't so good. So I will do things like a really common one that comes up in my mind is like, "Okay, so I'm going to pee and then I'm going to go fight crime." And I just say that in my head, "I'm going to pee and then I'm going to go fight crime." And it works. It makes me pee.
Do you then have to fight crime?
No,
else your bladder will know you're a liar.
Oh, okay. I lie to myself all the time. My guts don't know the difference. Or like if that one doesn't work, like if there's a lot of people around, there's no music in that restroom, then I will convince myself I'm about to go sit down and watch a movie that like not a movie I'm super excited to see. It would just be like a TNT showing of Die Hard or something. There's something very comforting in my mind about just like sitting down to a movie I don't totally care about. And it just relaxes me enough that I will go.
Huh.
But I didn't know if that was the only one. I didn't know if this was a universal experience or not, or if people.
No.
Go ahead.
I think it's universal. I think a key difference between us is that I do sometimes lose this. That's the, like, I very sincerely, whether it's like at a urinal and there's someone next to me so I can't finish my business, or it's the thing you're saying where it's like, I'm with a group of friends somewhere. I said, excuse me, I'm going to go run to the bathroom and I'm not making anything happen. I start to think in my brain is like, oh no, this is too long for me to have been in here and not done anything.
At that point, you're lost. You can't come back from that.
So I just have to, I'll just go some other time.
Yeah.
When things are different. I don't know.
Yeah.
I lost this one.
I know. I've been there too. I lose them all the time. There's ones where I'm like, it's not going to happen. I just have to hold on to this a little bit longer. There have been times where I've been at bars where the bathroom is so impossibly crowded that I will try to go there. It's not working. I just pretend that I went. And then I'll just go outside somewhere and be like, well, I'm going to find an alley or something and I will go pee there.
I think that's better. I think that's honestly brave.
Thanks, man.
I really thought this was going to be like a, what are you nostalgic to get back to after quarantine? Because you started with the word nostalgia and going to bars and to club.
Well, it's just thinking back to a time when I would do that kind of thing. How nice it was that was what I was worried about. I feel like things are going to change when I get back into the real world. I won't even have these little problems anymore because I'd be like, it could be so much worse.
I had a quick question for you. Are we still doing the show?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time. Honest question. Having a second baby during the quarantine, make it easier or make it harder?
it's really hard, and not because of her. It's crazy. I'll say this while knocking on wood. She doesn't know how to cry yet, and we're not going to teach her. The most she does is she kind of fusses a little, but there's no genuine sobs or cries. And I don't mean like tears, because they don't produce tears this early, but generally a baby, like they have that like kind of like ear splitting little cry that they do. And she has not done it once yet. Even when she's genuinely uncomfortable, like her umbilical stump, there's like that scab that sits on there. It got caught in some clothing at one point. We didn't know it had happened and it tore out a little bit. And she was genuinely uncomfortable and just did like these kind of like fussy little noises. And we're like, maybe she's hungry. And then later found that blood in her shirt. But she's like the perfect baby. If my son was going to school during this time and we were just on paternity or maternity leave, this would be like, honestly, it would be like a vacation. And I know a lot of parents were like, fuck you. Cause it's not usually like that. It wasn't like that with our first, but something about the second child, a lot of times they're just a little bit calmer. But having him at home though is what makes it really tough with a baby, because he wants some more attention and he's really aware of what he wants. It's not like he doesn't quite get it. And like, he's just feeling very restless. He will say, Dad, I want you to pay attention to me right now. I'm like, okay. All right. Let me put this thing down. Hold on.
Well, that sounds pretty tough.
It's hard. It's a big juggling act. Cause I'm working too. I'm not really taking paternity. I'm like doing records for my episode and it's really hard to get it all done. And then you're up all night because a baby's got to feed every 2.5 hours.
You also miss out on I know you said that, Colleen's parents were making the drive up there, but you miss out on like the village showing up when you have a baby, everyone wants to stop by and meet it with, you know, enough time in between. So you're not throwing a party or anything like that. And people want to bring food and bring presents. And for a while you have another adult to hold the baby for a while. And you're missing out on all that right now too.
Yeah. That's where it really is. We had her parents come for a little while, but we also, that didn't last very long. I mean, they came out, they helped out and they were crucial to helping us get on our feet. But after that, you can't have other people come by. You can't just have like people drop by and watch one over the other for you. It's like, it's all on you and you're in the house. If you can't really go anywhere with a baby right now, you can't put a mask on a baby. So you're there. You're just stuck.
Man.
Yeah. Anyway, it's not.
Well, congratulations again.
Thank you. Thank you. It's not
this
so
was
bad.
A weird episode.
I think it's a good one, man. I think every time that we really open up, I think those are our very best episodes.
Okay.
The ones where we just like shoot the shit, they're fine, man. They're fine filler. But where people learn more about us and we open our hearts a little bit, Dan, I feel like those are the ones that they're going to, those are the ones that are going to go to the Library of Congress.
Okay. But you know, being mysterious is so important to me, right?
I do. You shut the door after you have sex and you have pee. You gotta pee.
Sometimes I'll shut the door during sex because it just gets too intimate. I'm like, get out of here.
I have another question for you, Dan.
Okay.
I have a question for you also about the time that was. We're going to end up going back into society at some point. I hope that things will go back to how they were. And I feel like since we're hitting a reset button anyway on social gatherings, are there things, especially at parties, like party formalities, that you think we should just kill, that we don't need to deal with anymore? Do you understand what I'm saying when I say that? I can give you my example if you want.
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. There's a thing that happens at any party you go to where someone has prepared food, where you get there, they're in the last few minutes of like putting on the finishing touches, and there's a group of people, they're all in the living room, let's say, and then the host will come out and say, okay, it's time to eat. And everyone just freezes. Nobody does a fucking thing because nobody wants to be the first person to go eat. Right. There's like a weird stigma against being that first person. After the dinner, you don't driving home with your significant other being like, can you believe Jerry went first? Like nobody gives a shit in the end.
No, you've never judged anyone for that.
No,
ever.
And no one's ever been judged for it. Even if the host went first, I would be like, thank God. Everybody's just waiting for somebody to go first. And it's this weird pageantry that we do. And it takes the food's ready. The food's been ready for like 7 minutes before the first person is like, all right. And they make a big show of like having to be first.
Right.
I want that gone. I want to never have to think about that again.
Yeah. That annoys me as someone who I don't like host dinner parties, but I try to make a nice hot appetizer whenever I go to a party with friends as part of my contribution to it. And I hate as the person who makes it, be like, all right, the bacon wrapped potato bites are in the kitchen. They're done.
Yeah.
And then see no one move. And I want to be like, excuse me, the bacon wrapped potato bites that I made that kept me in the kitchen away from all of you this whole time and are the reason that I'm sweating now, they're done.
I think what I'm going to do as a host from now on is as soon as I make something, I'm going to come out and I'm going to be like, the food is done. Let's see. Daniel, pick up a plate, you're first. I'll pick like the first three people and be like, you, then you, then you. Like I'm at a wedding and I'm choosing tables to go up to the buffet. And then after that, I feel like it just jump starts it and everybody would be fine.
Yeah, I like that. I think my party etiquette that I would like to lose, and any of my friends who are listening to this already know what's coming and don't even know why I would want to make it an officially acceptable thing to do. I've Irish exited out of 98% of every party I've ever been to. For anyone who doesn't know or are from somewhere where regionally this means something different, it's when you leave a party without saying goodbye to anyone. You just disappear when it's time for you to go. I've almost always done it. I've taken some shit for it. If it's a party with like one person I know and mostly strangers, then I will say goodbye to the main person I know. I wouldn't like leave a buddy behind. And I'll usually say goodbye to a host, but that's about it. It's for me in the past, it's been either I'm tired or an anxiety thing, which is like, I need to go right now. And most importantly is I need like the feeling of freedom that I can go right now. I can leave whenever I want and I don't have to say anything to anyone and run the risk of someone being like, oh wait, no, hold on. Wait for me. We'll share a car or right. Not that I care about sharing cars,
no,
but like
just legit
now I have to wait for this person to say their goodbyes.
Yeah.
And like when I want to go, I want to go. And you know, I made those potato things. So like, shut up. Fuck you. I contributed to this party. I've earned the right to leave. And I think once the quarantine, I think when we're allowed to see people again, all of the hitherto undiagnosed new anxieties that will all develop, I think that will be a more appealing idea than to leave whenever you want.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm not sure I phrased that well, but there are people who might not realize it now, but once they get out of this, are not completely equipped to jump right back into socializing the way that they used to. That's certainly something that I'm prepared for. And I think it might surprise a lot of people that, like, you know, you were saying earlier that you watch a movie and the characters on TV are standing too close to each other and it makes you knee-jerk anxious. I think it's not a switch that we're all going to flip off. I mean, like, okay, I'm comfortable at parties now, you know, because we've done this work of 65 days or whatever it is of training your bodies for this new reality. And that's not going to just go away, I don't think. So I think we're going to see a rise in people who their body tells them quite suddenly it's time to go now. And I want them to be able to do that mostly so I can do that and not get a fucking text from my friend Nick the next day.
When you said it, I immediately laughed because it brought me back to a time when we had gone out drinking one night at work and everybody was very drunk. And then all of a sudden you ran away so fast that you fell and broke your glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe your phone too. I mean, you lost your glasses and broke your phone. I can't remember how it went. But it wasn't like you just dashed out. You literally dashed out. You ran out of the place and ran down the street so fast that your legs couldn't keep up with you and you fell.
Yeah. So the reason you remember the details of glasses and phone is because I did drop and break my glasses and my phone. I was on my phone talking to someone, tripped like an idiot, dropped my phone, broke my glasses. And the person I was talking to on the other end of the phone heard a stranger say, "Oh shit."
Yeah. I've seen you disappear from a lot of parties. I guess I haven't seen you. I've felt your presence disappear from a lot of parties and been like, "Oh, it's fine. It's just what he does." Also, then you don't have to deal with the possibility of having to hug people.
Yes. Wins all around.
Another one that I would really like to get rid of is showing up to a party. I know that it's my job to bring something. So generally, mm-hmm. if it's a party where there's not food, I bring some alcohol of some sort. I have to find that host and make sure they see that I brought this thing before I'm like going to go put it in the fridge. I'm not just going to show up, immediately go to the kitchen, put it all in the fridge, and then like walk into the party. It's very important to me that the host knows, he participated in the normal social etiquette. Perfect.
Right. I have to walk in with a case of beer and walk by a fridge and pretend I'm an idiot and go, "Hey, where's this go? hey, host, where's got a spot for this? Oh, fridge? Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, right there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You want one? Because I just opened it up right now. I don't know what it is about me. Like, I can't. I would be, what a waste. It's like when you go to a restaurant and they turn around, right? When you put a tip in the tip jar and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck, I did tip you. That one is new. That five you see, that's new.
Yeah. I wonder if I don't host enough parties. I wonder if people keep track of who doesn't bring things.
No.
Or if that's in my head.
I think nobody does. I certainly don't. We've had parties and I don't give a shit. I'll just suddenly notice there's new stuff. Or like when they show up, I'm not looking at their hands. I'm looking at my friends. And I can't imagine there's anybody at the end of the night who's like accounting for, wait a second. We had 12 people here, but only 10 brought alcohol. What the fuck?
I think I would start to notice if it was the same person over and over again. And if it was like a particularly egregious, like showing up empty handed.
Yeah.
And then being like, "Oh, what's this? What is this? Scotch? This looks good. This looks fancy." Like gets one of the higher end beers out of the fridge. I don't know. Like if one person was doing that, then I'd be like, "All right, you're on my radar now."
I do have a friend and I won't name him on this podcast, but when he goes to weddings, he doesn't bring a wedding gift because he thinks that him coming to the wedding is gift enough. And that's so bold.
That's the most bonkers take I've ever heard.
Yeah, that he got himself together, got a suit for the wedding, that he, even if he's not in the wedding, and that he bought the plane ticket, whatever it was, that he showed up. That's the gift.
What does he think all those wrapped things on the gift table are?
Oh, he knows. He knows.
He just thinks he's the only one who's figured out this?
Bucking the trend. Yeah. I think that he thinks very highly of his presence, I assume, and assumes that's enough. Like, wow, I can't believe you got him. He came to your wedding? Incredible.
Would you say that he makes weddings better?
it's a wash. I think, yeah, he's a fun guy. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are fun at weddings, and they also brought a Cuisinart.
Right. Did he go to your wedding?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to find out. I'm going to find out. Gosh, I hope it wasn't me.
It's you, dude. It's such an awful move. I can't believe you do it.
Now I'll tell you afterwards.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I'm going to find the social accounts so that we can wrap up this show. I should just have them open on a tab, but I don't. I got to dig them up. Anyway, I did want to ask you about something. Now, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but you famously told a teenage girl that you wanted to hook up with that you wrote the lyrics to Brick to try and impress her. What's some other IP you've stolen to get where you are now?
The same girl, I tried to do a very similar trick, but I evolved it a little bit, where I'd taken a popular song's music and then I'd written new lyrics over it. And I told her that that I wrote the whole thing. And it was some emotional song about being sad and 14 to the tune of You Get What You Give by the New Radicals. Like, an impossibly popular song that I was like, hey, I wrote this. However that song starts.
Incredible. Okay, thank you, Daniel. Yeah. On Twitter,
that's helpful for everyone who doesn't, because we're pretty loose about what's real and what's fake in these end things. That pretending to write Brick to impress a girl is absolutely, that's canon. That's a real thing that I did.
Yeah, fun thing. An underage girl, Dan.
All right,
I'm not going to reveal the fact that you were also a child. On Twitter, you can follow Daniel at DOB_Inc. You can follow Soren, that's me, at Soren_LTD. If you want to find out about Michael, find out what's going on with him, good luck. You can find him at Make Me Bacon Please with PLS. Or you can follow Quick Question at QQ_SorenAndDan. Or you can tweet it, Quick Question. I think Michael does a lot of work with that Twitter account, I assume. you can also email us at QQ@SorenAndDaniel@gmail.com. And you can follow, find, hire our producer, sound engineer, and editor, Gabe, at GabeHarder.com.
Go ahead and fire up the old GabeHarder.com in the browser.
Yeah, let's
see
how it
comes up.
Let's see how the site is.
Get ready. Something really cool is coming soon. All right.
Still. Okay. Yeah. Oh, Gabe, ellipses.
Yeah, I'm trying to build anticipation on that website.
Definitely something that people love doing is going back to a website after it's proven to be nothing. I'm always checking in on websites that prove to be dead ends in the past. Just like I have my running list. I check like the websites that I know work. And then I was like, now let's see if this has updated in 6 months. Still no. Oof. Going to be good, though. See you tomorrow.
It just Gabe is a coiling spring that we're going to see release any second now. Gabe, I like this strategy. That's all I have.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.